We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the show. Clint Sterner's Football at 4.
Football at 4 is sponsored by Cold Coors Light 2. Pop a top and repeat, baby. The world's most refreshing beer. There you go. Nick Caserio. Nick Caserio joined Payne and Pendergast exclusively tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m.
That's
so
right.
Make sure you're plugged in to my guy. My guys, Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne. They'll be rocking the airways 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. Hey, Tyler, you going to be up listening, Bob?
Of course. I wouldn't miss that for the world.
We got Nick Caserio, Texans GM. Boy, got a lot of questions out there. You got a lot of questions to answer. That'll be a good one. College football. The year of uncertainty. Is that fair? Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's been an odd year. Georgia was the only certainty we thought we had.
Well, definitely for Tyler. I mean, hell, he's got the Aggies had the eighth best roster in all of college football and finished fifth in the West. So it's definitely some uncertainty. That was unnecessary.
Ouch. He also had him at an outside shot to get into the
playoffs. I know. I shouldn't have done that.
That's all right, man.
It felt good.
I shouldn't have kicked the man when he was down. I'm not a big fan of that. I shouldn't have done it.
But I loved it.
We've got, check it out. The Pac-12, you're talking about the uncertainty of college football. The Pac-12 has nobody even relevant in the top five in the country, top four in the country, right? The ACC, nobody even in the conversation once it came crunch time, right? Pittsburgh and Wake Forest played in the ACC championship game. You had monsters like OU, Clemson, anybody, Oregon, USC out on the West Coast, none of them even in the conversation. The uncertainty this year for me in the college football playoff rankings in terms of who's going to get a chance to play for a championship has been at an all-time high. We look at the Heisman Trophy, right? The uncertainty there, it's like nobody wanted to win it, right? They were talking about multiple defensive players being invited to New York. And really, when we look at the top, just the top four in a sense of what's the ranking going to look like, not just we didn't know who the hell was going to be in there, but we didn't know who was going to fall in what slot, right? Well, a lot of that was cleared up this weekend in championship football and on championship weekend. And I'm going to tell you my takeaway from all of the football games, right, this week is Bryce Young, baby. Bryce Young, the quarterback for the Alabama Crimson Tide, he cleared some things up in the one of the most uncertain years in college football. He cleared some things up. What'd he do, Show? He shot his team to the number one ranking. Alabama was sitting at number three, and with a loss to Georgia, I think it was going to be questionable whether they were going to get into this college football play, at least going into championship weekend. We knew that a loss by Alabama was probably going to push them out of the top four.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Especially how we see things, how it shaped out and ended. I think so.
Bryce Young said, no, not so quick. Not only am I going to go out there and ball out, I'm going to shoot my team to the number one. I'm going to play well enough and beat Georgia convincingly enough. 41-24, is that right?
Yep.
I'm going to beat Georgia convincing enough that I'm going to shoot my team to the number one ranking. Thank you, Bryce Young. He cleared up the rankings for us, right? You want to talk about the Heisman Trophy winner? I believe that Bryce Young, and with his performance against the Georgia Bulldogs, I think he sealed up the Heisman Trophy. 26 of 44, 421 yards and three touchdowns. In impressive fashion, he balled out for four quarters on the biggest stage versus who everybody thought was the best team in college football, including me, all year long. The kid won the Heisman Trophy Saturday afternoon as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. There is no one there. You could, and I like Aide Hutchinson with Michigan. Yep. It's not even a close thing. Everybody else is battling for second. That is cleared up. And, Clint, it's the last 2 weeks. You know the term I love to use about certain quarterbacks, and that's the fixer. And at the college level, I don't know what he's going to be at the pro level, but at the college level, Bryce Young, the last 2 weeks, won the Heisman, showed he's the best player in the country, and was the fixer. We look at the Auburn game. At the end, down the stretch, he made big-time throws, big-time plays for his team to be even in the situation to play Georgia to have a chance. And then against Georgia, basically, I'll never forget Gino Auriemma, the head coach of the Connecticut women's team, one time said, listen, I'm not going to tell you what happened. I mean, we had Diana Taurasi, and they didn't. He said, hey, nothing crazy. Right. We had Diana, they didn't. In the game Saturday, the last 2 weeks as well, Nick Saban had Bryce Young, and they didn't.
That's right.
And it was clear. Stetson Bennett could not step up and match him anywhere close. They had Bryce Young, and that was the difference. He's the best player in the country, and he showed it.
So here's the other thing I think that Bryce Young did. There's three things, right? Shot his team to number one ranking, won the Heisman Trophy. And the third thing is I think he established himself as the number one pick in the draft in 2023. I think Trevor Lawrence was a guy that helped from the time he graduated high school and enrolled at Clemson. It was just a matter of when he becomes eligible, 3 years in, he was going to be the number one pick, right? I don't think Bryce Young came in as that guy. But I think he left after this season. I think that game against Georgia, in my opinion, he established himself as the number one pick in the 2023 draft right now. I don't think there's anybody that's going to hold a candle. And here's why. Because not only is the dude gifted, right? I mean, they're all physically we're talking Heisman, we're talking about number one ranking, we're talking about draft, top of the draft. All of those dudes are unbelievably gifted. But what puts Bryce Young on a whole nother level is Bryce Young is always in control. It doesn't matter if he's in the pocket and it's chaos around him and it's collapsing. It doesn't matter if he's outside the pocket and he's right at or on top of the line of scrimmage and there doesn't appear to be anybody open. There doesn't appear to be any running lanes. He still looks to the sideline and laterals the football or finds somebody open downfield. The dude is always cool, calm, collected. You can't coach that. It is very Kyler Murray-esque to me. Not the overall game, because he's probably got a bigger arm and he doesn't have quite as much twitch.
He's got a bigger arm than Kyler?
Yes. No question. No question about it. He's got a bigger arm, doesn't have the twitch. Not as much twitch as Kyler has. Kyler's on a whole different planet. He doesn't have as much twitch. I think those are the two right now. Those are the two things. That's where I think they vary. They're different. But the one consistent with both of those guys is in situations where 99.9% of human beings, even in their world, they panic, right? They panic, they try too hard, they blink in the moment. These two guys appear to be playing with, I don't want to say a man amongst boys because the boys that I would be talking about are absolute monsters. But they're playing with a level of confidence that they can't be touched. The same thing, like Lamar Jackson plays with that athletic ability. Like they're playing with a certain level of confidence and the difference is their mind is so level the whole time. They never lose cool. They never make piss poor decisions because of the chaos around them. They make bad decisions sometimes, but not because of the chaos around them. I just think that is an unbelievably rare characteristic. We don't see the combination very often. And when I see it and you couple it with playing huge and big-time moments like we've watched the last 2 weeks, I'm sold on it, man.
What it feels like when I hear from you is with Bryce Young, and this is what teams are looking for, i.e. this is what the Texans should be looking for, when you combine what he can do on the field, you just said he has a bigger arm than Kyler Murray, a guy who could play baseball, who's got a super arm, and then matching his poise off the field stuff, do you view him right now as an organization changer?
Yes.
Like if you bring him onto your – like this is a guy that can change your organization.
Yeah, absolutely. You look at what he's doing in Bama. I mean, Bama's a very vulnerable football team. They're not. It's not the same Bama that we've always watched. Jalen Hurts, for the most part, you can say Jalen Hurts and Tua and those guys They took the field. I'll tell you this. They took the field against the Arkansas's of the world, the Johnny Manziel less A&M Aggies of the world, the middle of the pack, the LSU. I mean the middle of the pack SEC teams, and they played comfortably because they knew their defense wasn't going to give up more than 14 or 17 or they knew they were going to go out there and get it done. This was a year where the Alabama Crimson Tide lost a ton of their past, right? That to the draft, coaches moving on to new programs, things of that nature. And this guy came in and steadied the ship, right? I firmly believe, Show, that this dude is a program changer, and I think he established himself as the number one overall pick in 2023. I think he established himself as the guy that tanking organizations should have their sights set on. This is a guy we've talked in Houston for months and months and months about. All I told everybody before this year started, none of these quarterbacks that we're talking about that are coming out this year are legit top 10 candidates. They got a lot of work to do to get there. Well, here we sit with the season all but done, but bowl games, and what are we talking about? There's no quarterbacks this year. I read an article a couple days ago. There's potentially no quarterbacks in the top 10 this year. This is a weak draft in terms of quarterbacks, at least physically, at least what we know of these guys right now. If you can go and you can start right now planning around positioning yourself to have a shot at a guy like Bryce Young in 2023, and you're an organization that's bottom of the barrel that doesn't have a quarterback, in other words, you're not Jacksonville, you're not the New York Jets. The New York Jets, which that leaves the Texans. Bryce Young should be on your green board, blue board, black board, whatever the hell you call it in your – That should be a piece of your figuring, if you will, moving forward as you get closer to this year's draft and next year's draft. How do you position yourself to have the ammunition, the draft capital, to trade up to number one if Bryce Young does indeed decide to come out? I think he's that special of a player.
Stay tuned. Listen, I got a 24-hour tease. I got a question about Bryce Young that I want to bring up tomorrow. We're on the show. I got a question about Bryce Young. I just want to put it together right and give you a good time to respond to it. But tomorrow I'll bring that up to you because you got me thinking a lot of things here. All right, as we are here on a Reaction Monday presented by Coors Light, is it acceptable that this offense is playing the way that it is for the Texans because of the talent they have, right? Is that a fair thing? We're blaming, so many people are giving blame to a lot of places. Is it fair to just say they just don't have the talent, and that's why it's acceptable that this offense looks the way it does? We'll discuss that next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
It's a Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Clint Sterner and the show.
All right, Clint, is it fair? That's the question I'm throwing out right now. Is it fair when we look at this offense, and they've been horrible, I mean bad, and they put together another just real bad one, 141 yards of total offense. I don't even, as you would say, it feels like you got to try to be that bad.
Yeah, it's not good.
141 total yards of offense.
And that's a stretch, let's be honest. When I mean, it was at like 102 yards, I think, late in the ball game. And so, I mean, Davis Mills came in and made a couple of throws, and it's just you hate garbage. You hate garbage stats at the end of the game because it really doesn't tell the whole truth. I carried out the third quarter summary, and at the end of the third quarter, you don't want to see those numbers, Chief.
I mean, they can't be great. I mean,
oh my goodness.
It can't be a surprise. Any of the numbers can't be a surprise of how bad it is. But it's interesting because David Culley spoke to the media today, And I know you've talked about it. We've talked about it on here. Every show that I've talked, I've listened to Landry and Lopez talk about it, and Seth and Sean. And it is, man, there, it feels like there's got to be a move made, and maybe a move made at the top in terms of who's calling the plays and running the offense. And he is steadfast on Tim Kelly as his guy.
No, there's no problem. I have no problem at all with Tim calling the plays or any of the guys on our staff.
Talk about Tim Kelly just then. You said any other person on the staff with play calling. Do you mean anyone else would do that?
No, I'm just saying I'm happy with all the guys on our staff with what they're doing, the job they're doing.
I don't know how you can be happy with anybody in the building. Offensively. Look, I think Lovie Smith has done a good job. I think this defense and some of the players have done a good job. The best that they can with zero help. But I don't know how, when the head coach of this football team is asked about what's going on offensively, I don't know how you even shape your mouth to say that you're happy with the play calling, with the scheming, with the play, with the execution, with any of it. I mean, if we're going to talk specifically about the offensive coordinator, I think it's on the offensive coordinator to script plays coming out in the first drive, and you've got.
That's traditionally how it's done, right?
Ideally. Word on the street was that Bill O'Brien didn't believe in a script, so I don't know that Tim Kelly does or doesn't. I would think that Tim Kelly does at this point in time. But you can't tell me that you practice all week long and you prep all week long and you come out and you've got Brandon Cooks running a go route down the sideline as a decoy, and you got 81, what's his name, Davis?
Davis.
You got Davis as the primary receiver. That's your number one option in a sprint out concept, and you got Nico Collins crossing behind him. Your number one, I'll argue, the most important player on the field in that particular concept across the board is the whoever your number one receiver is in the flat, because if he's not there, he's going to break up the field and he's going to come back down the sideline as a late outlet for your quarterback. I'll argue that that's the most important part of that entire concept, and you got a guy on the field that's never played it down in the NFL. I mean, that's you
first all, play of the game
all year long. I mean, all week long, you game planned, and that's what you came up with. Not you didn't game plan. Okay, you want to move the pocket with Tyrod Taylor because you got some question marks up front. Okay, cool, I got it. All right, let's put Brandon Cooks. Let's make Brandon Cooks our number one option. Can we do that? Is that okay? Let's make Brandon Cooks our number one option, but let's also include maybe Nico Collins and Chris Conley in some kind of bunch set and sprint that direction where you've got actual options for the quarterback. But instead, we run a very vanilla concept, which I'm fine with. But you've got your immediate outlet along with your late outlet for your quarterback as a guy that's never played in the NFL. That's a scheme, that's a design, that's a responsibility of the offensive play caller that I believe failed the guys miserably. We can look at the third and fourth down situation later in the ballgame. When the ballgame got out of hand, the Texans were off, obviously in a four-down situation. They got third and eight, and he runs inside duo or zone, whatever you want to call it, a concept inside run to Rex Burkhead, and he gets 2 yards on third and eight. Right? And then you come back on fourth and six, and you throw a stick route versus what appeared to be a cover two form of coverage. Whether it was two-man or regular two, I think it was two-man, but whether it was regular two or two-man, it doesn't matter. You don't throw a stick route versus cover two. The corner's responsibility is the flat. He's up there. I mean, if it's man, by rule, he's going to lose at the line of scrimmage, be super aggressive, lose the line of scrimmage, get in your hip pocket, and your receiver's going to stop and try to catch the stick route, and the DB's going to be in the way. We saw the same problem last week on fourth down with Nico Collins. Here we are this week, it's the same thing. That can't be your – those are critical situations in the game. These are just two of the more obvious situations where it's happened, right? I mean, it happens every single game damn near where whatever you're trying to do or whoever you're trying to target just makes absolutely zero sense. And so I don't know – and I'm not saying you fire fire Tim Kelly or – you take the play calling duties from him. I'm not saying you do anything. But what you can't do, in my opinion, what you can't do is go to the media week after week after week after week of unbelievably poor production offensively and say, oh no, I'm happy with my coaches. I'm happy with the scheme. I'm happy with the game plan. Like you can't keep doing that because it's not There's no way you're honestly happy with it. And the players see that.
Yeah. Clint and Ron, the show, Tyler producing this. Is it a fair excuse that they just don't have the talent of why this offense is so bad? So bad. Is that a fair thing? And I'm just listening to what you're saying and hear him talk about Tim Kelly. Because when you have an offense that's this bad, I mean, you look at a lot of things. You look at the quarterback, you look at the coordinator. I mean, those are two big things you look at. And yesterday when asked about Tyrod Taylor, he's still the starter, he said, when you lose 31-0 and you get shut out and you don't score, you evaluate everything. But it does not seem like he's evaluating the coordinator.
Well, he doesn't seem like he's evaluating the coaches at all, and that's the scary part.
You know what I'm saying? I would think that would be included, the coaches and the coordinators.
You would think so. Yeah, you know, there is no way, and I said this to you earlier, show, there is no way. I mean, it's the first time in franchise history that they've been shut out at home in a regular season. Mm-hmm. It's the first time in 19 years in the NFL, the Panthers did it last, where a team was shut out by 30 points two times in one season. Texans lost to Buffalo 40-0. They lost to Indy 30-0. I mean, this is historically bad, whether it's the NFL or the Texans. It's historically bad.
There was not even ever a belief they were going to score yesterday.
No. They didn't even threaten. And they are dead last statistically in every basic fundamental stat that you can have in the NFL. And you're doing things like I just outlined on the first play of the game and in critical situations throughout the game. How can you not at least say, hey, man, we've all got to do a better job. Our coaching staff, we're not happy with it. They had 106 yards at the end of the third quarter yesterday. 106 yards after three quarters yesterday.
That's total yards, not just passing or not just rushing. That's all of it together.
Total yards, 71 rushing, 35 passing. 35 passing yards through three quarters
in the National
Football League. And so I don't know how, when these things are the case, and when I watched the film. I watched the game three times, and I don't know how. And you can't see everything, but I don't know how you watch what I've watched and go, oh, I'm happy with my coach. No problem with the game plan. No problem with what we're doing offensively. Nothing at all. We just got to execute better. Like, what?
At some point, when you just look at game play one. All right, this is the play we got, right? I've had all week to look at it. Play one, roll out, and Brandon Cooks is a decoy, and your least experienced receiver, maybe your least experienced player on the roster, is the primary guy.
Maybe it don't get any least. He's never played. It doesn't get any. It doesn't get, like, it's impossible to have less experience. It's impossible. I didn't mean to get hung up on something, but it's impossible.
That's the thought. Like, at some point, you got to look at it. You're like, yeah, that's not just we don't have the talent. Like, yeah, we don't have, like, that's not even just because you got a talent in Brandon Cooks. But he's the deep.
I would run like Brandon Cooks. The webbing of his fingers would be ripped, and his feet would be blistered. I mean, I would. He wouldn't come off the field. He would be the most targeted receiver in NFL history. I mean, there's no question about it.
We got him
decoying. We got him running off a corner so that we can sprint to Davion Davis.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to think his thoughts on that play design.
Being online.
Yeah.
Interesting with Brandon Cooks. Brandon, I'd love to know his thoughts on that play design.
Well, I think he called a second ago, but I guess he didn't want to talk.
What are you talking about, Tyler?
Oh, nothing.
He called. I'd be interested to know what his thought was. Decoy, first play of the game, because he's got to be past the. All right,
that's not the
coach
only,
got it.
That's not the only time, man. There is, and look, I know guys got to pick up checks on Tuesday. Guys got to fight through some stuff, but there is no way as much football as, and we can talk Brandon Cooks, you can talk Justin Britt, you can talk a guy, Chris Conley, you can talk about guys that have played a lot of, there's no way they watch this film and walk away going, man, we're doing some good things, we just got to execute better. It's impossible. There's no way.
This has to be one of the worst years of his life. I mean, when you think about who he's played with, games he's played in, the teams he's played on, the quarterbacks he's played with, this has got to be rough for Brandon Cooks. He's been to the Super Bowl twice in this. All right. The lines are out on the college football playoff, and they are huge, huge lines. We'll tell you what those are coming up and which team is more disrespected, Cincinnati or Michigan. That's next.
It's a Reaction Monday. Here's Clint Sterner on the show.
All right, boys, the college football playoffs are set, Clint, and Georgia, they lose. They came in number one, but they lose to Alabama in the SEC championship game. They fall to 3 in the polls, but they are still in the playoff, and I think deservedly so. But one is Alabama. They will take on Cincinnati, the first non-Power 5 team to make it into the college football playoff, and the first non-Power 5 team since, hell, like, what, Army or Navy to be able to have a chance to play for a national championship realistically. And so they're in it at 4. They face Alabama. Then Georgia will face a very impressive Michigan team, what they did in the Big Ten championship against Iowa. The lines in those games, Clint. By the way, first someone said to me, do you think that Georgia was playing vanilla in the SEC championship game so they can really have it set up for Alabama the next time they play them and then really, really play the way they want to. Like, I just – people think they didn't really care about winning the SEC championship?
Yeah, nah, that's another one of them that's tough for me to wrap my head around. Like, that line of thinking is tough. Sounds good. Sounds good for our business. Sit around and talk about, you know, maybe they sugarcoated it a bit to get two teams in the SEC and – Yeah, I think Georgia
wanted to win and be undefeated, wanted to win the SEC championship. But the lines in these two games, right now, Alabama's a 13.5-point favorite over the undefeated Cincinnati Bearcats. And then Georgia is a 7.5-point favorite over Michigan. And Michigan was as impressive as anybody over the weekend. You look at their last two games, what they did to Ohio State and Iowa. Two top 13 teams is very, very impressive. Do you think either one of those teams, Cincinnati or Michigan, should feel they're being disrespected by the point lines in these games?
I mean, Michigan probably. Like, I think I would take Michigan in the points.
That feels strong. 7.5, especially after we just saw Georgia against Alabama. 7.5 over Michigan, and the way Michigan has looked, that is surprising to me. I thought Georgia would be favored, but I was thinking like 3. 7 over a touchdown favorite in this game, they have Georgia.
Yeah. No, I think that's a lot of points. I mean, I think when you look at the Georgia-Michigan matchup, I think the biggest question is what do they do at the quarterback position?
Who, Georgia?
Georgia, yes. I think when you look at that football game, I think you've got to look at it and go, okay, that offense's ceiling is really, really low when you're talking about the quarterback position, when you're talking about Stetson Bennett being at quarterback. Now, he hasn't been asked to do anything above just be a game manager, if you will. I mean, he's averaged, I mean, hell, he threw it 40-some-odd times against Alabama. And if you even take, if you put that into the, if you include that ball game, he still averaged teen attempts. I mean, it was 16, 17 attempts per game, and they didn't lose a ball game until Alabama. So, you know, the ceiling is really, really low. And I think that the question of the college football playoffs, the biggest topic going into it is going to be, do they go JT Daniels?
I mean, I don't know how they can't. Like, I feel like you got to. I feel like you got to give yourself a chance. Now, or maybe they could go into this thinking to themselves that Michigan's very similar to us, and if we don't turn the ball over, like, this will be a ground-and-pound physical game, and we feel like we can out-physical them, and we don't have a fear that Michigan can run away from us, which I could see them saying that, although – Michigan put up big-time points against Ohio State, and they ran the football and were able to throw it a bit. And they've had games, a game against Michigan State where they threw it for a lot and had big games on the outside. I'm not sure. I just think I'm with you. You've got to give – at this point now, you saw how bad it can be to where if you get down or if this thing is tight and Stetson Bennett has to be the winner, has to be a guy that you got to turn the thing over with, like I don't think you can feel confident about that. At this point, I think you got to put your best bullets out there.
Well, I think we know who the teams are, and I think Georgia has the ability at this point to change who they are more than anybody. We saw George Pickens, the receiver. He came back last week, had a couple of catches. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was viewed as one of, if not the top receiver in the country coming into this year before the injury, right? And so you put him back in the fold after a month, played a week, and now he's got a month to prepare. Now he could be a serious weapon with the Bowers kid at the tight end position. Now you've changed their skill players significantly, right? Now you plug in JT Daniels at the quarterback position, who was a Heisman hopeful, if you will, before the season started. So their ceiling, Georgia can take their ceiling and raise it significantly by the time the college football playoffs start. To me, we know who Michigan is. We know who Alabama is. We know exactly who Cincinnati is. And they're all good football teams. None of those teams can add a player or two to the mix and go, damn, how are they gonna manage that? Like, what are they going to look like with those two guys in the mix?
You think JT Daniels is significantly better than Stetson Bennett in terms of with the thought of, man, if I gotta put the ball in the quarterback's hands to make plays?
Absolutely. No, it's a no-brainer. When you talk about in the pocket, sitting tall, delivering and processing what's going on, delivering the big ball over the top, or driving the ball in windows underneath, or getting the ball out quick, there's no question about it. The more polished of the two passers, and it's not even close, is JT Daniels. Now, JT doesn't have the ability to get outside the pocket and play off platform, off script with his feet. He can with his arm, but with his feet. Stetson brings a little bit of wiggle there. To me, that's not. He didn't bring enough wiggle there to be to beat teams in the college football playoffs. He doesn't bring enough wiggle there to overcome what I think JT Daniels brings to the table in terms of being able to stretch the field with arm strength. I think that's where you could see a line. Well, I don't know, 7.5. Maybe they're taking that into account because that's a big line already, with all things considered. Oh,
yeah,
between
probably
them
they
and
may
Michigan.
Move up with Daniels if they say he's a starter. I mean, we'll see. I think this is disrespectful to Michigan. Like, I think Michigan's going to win the game, and they're going to have a long stretch. Harbaugh's going to have a long time to get this thing ready. And I think Michigan's got a little bit better. And the receiver coming back from Georgia is a big deal. But I think Michigan's skill guys are a little bit better. I feel a little bit more confidence in. And they've got – Georgia's got some good players. They got at least one big-time difference maker in Hutchinson. And then I think that their other outside pass rusher is really, really good. Those two guys could be real problems. All right, so that one's unfair. You think the Cincinnati line is fair, 13.5 with Alabama?
Yeah, look, I think it's fair, man. I mean, after watching Alabama drum Georgia and you know, if you just look at it, again, 30,000-foot view, you got a team that beat Georgia, beat the number one team that for 12 weeks was flawless. I mean, they beat them like a drum. They beat them consistently. And you got that matchup versus a group of five who, I know they beat Notre Dame, but you can look at it and go, man, who are they? How powerful are they? How strong are they week in, week out? You know, what are they capable of doing versus a better opponent, a bigger, stronger, faster opponent? I think the jury's still out there. So if you just look at what Alabama did in their most recent outing, beating Georgia, and then you take into account that it's a group of five school, I think a double digit line is fair. Yes.
Yeah. Somebody texting, show I'm from LSU. Bama beat Cincinnati 56-10. I watched Cincy versus Houston. Cincinnati is way too small. Listen, they got some pros over there. Their secondary is really, really good. They got two really good corners for Cincinnati, and Ritter is a really good player who's going to get drafted in maybe third or fourth round in the NFL. Their quarterback, who's been experienced and really good the last 2 years, they're not going to be afraid. They played a team like this in Georgia last year. The Georgia Bulldogs, that are number one, right, have been number one all year. They played this team and matched up with them last year in the Sugar Bowl and led that game the whole way until the end, and Georgia won on a 56 or 54-yard field goal that just went through. So I don't think they're going to be afraid of the physicality. And they got some dudes over there, and they're going to be sitting here listening all month long about how they're going to get their asses kicked. I don't listen. I can't go to as far as picking them, but I do think this will be competitive. I think in the fourth quarter, like, there'll be a game. And I think the injury to Bama's, would you say he's their best receiver? I think there's an argument. I think
Jameson Williams is a better receiver, but Mechie's a big key to what they do. Yes. I mean, Alabama's got that.
That's
think
a that, big injury.
It's huge. It's a huge injury. But the big thing about Alabama is those two receivers complement each other really, really well. So from a quarterback's perspective, you got a guy that's underneath, that's more of a possession guy, can go deep if you need to, but he's shifty, he's good in space, he's your old reliable, trusty, and then you got Jameson Williams who could take it off, take it the distance, can take the top off the defense. I mean, those complement each other unbelievably well, and so that's the part that you miss. It's less about, hey, the one guy and how good was he, to, man, they were damn good together. Boy, they were complimentary. Yeah. I don't doubt that with a month, Nick Saban, they got two or three dudes that can serve the same purpose as Mechie. Maybe not to the same degree, but they can serve the same purpose, just like in the Auburn game. They lose Jameson Williams, Mechie's the dude, and then what happened down the line on the final touchdown, right? I think his last name's Bryant. It was a different kid, right? It was a whole different player. So they got plenty of dudes. I'm not worried about that.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see in that game. That'll be interesting. I can't wait. That's the game that I'm most excited to watch. And it may be an ass kicking soon, which many people believe it will be. I don't think so. I think Cincinnati is going to hang in there. But I cannot wait for that game. Clint Sterner, Ron, the show. Tyler producing this. Remember, behind us, the Coaches Show with David Culley. He joins Mark Vandermeer and John Harris. 5 o'clock right behind us, the Coaches Show. And tomorrow. Will be a big day right here on the station. 7:30, Nick Caserio will join Payne and Pendergast exclusively right here on Sports Radio 610. So set your clocks. I know many people have some thoughts about what's going on. And to us, the face of this organization right now, Nick Caserio will join Payne and Pendergast tomorrow. And we'll see if it gets into this, but it feels like this is as bad as it's been. Especially since Nick Caserio has been here, it feels like they've reached the low point here. And I was listening to a guy we both like to listen to, Pat McAfee. He is entertaining as hell. And I listened to him describe what has happened with the Texans yesterday and where they are. And I'm like, God, dog, I know it's bad, but is it as bad as Pat McAfee described it?
That Houston team yesterday with how the Colts, like what the Colts did to Houston yesterday, they just ran the ball right down the f-ing Texans' throat. Yeah. I mean, it was, they just f-ing demolished the Houston.
Slaughter.
0 points, pick on the first play of the f-ing game. Yeah. So, yeah. Like, show up, how you doing, keep it moving. They just ran it right down Houston. And I don't even know if there was enough prayers for Jack Easterby to put last night and yesterday that can make that team stop the Colts. I actually thought numerous times during the game yesterday, how has this team won two games?
Yeah, I know.
How has this team won two games? I have no idea how they showed up for 60 minutes against an NFL team. There's some bad football going on right now.
Is it that bad? I mean, just how the hell they win two games? How do they win? How do they beat the Titans?
I tell you how they beat the Titans. They handed it. They were injured like hell. They had the top three skilled players out, and they turned the ball over five times.
Yeah, but they got a win. They got two wins. Is it this bad? Is this a low point for you?
Are we talking rock bottom?
Are we there? Yeah.
I just don't know that it can get. I don't know that it can get any worse. I don't know that it can get any worse. I'm driving to the game yesterday. And there is no traffic whatsoever on the exit. Not one bit of traffic on the Kirby exit, like on the exit ramp. Usually it's backed up onto the highway, and it'll cause an accident because the traffic comes to a halt and stop two lanes wide. And
generally, if you're trying to get there 30 minutes prior, if you try to leave your house 30 minutes prior, you're not getting there on time.
Yeah, and there was absolutely no traffic yesterday. I literally took the Kirby exit, came to the red light, went straight, did my own little path back to my where we park, our media parking. So it starts with that. Clearly, I mean, the fan base is out. I mean, clearly they're just not coming to the games, right? Secondly, I show up to the game, and the first play of the game is an interception, right? And that particular game ends up being a shutout, 31-0, and it is against the most hated team in the AFC. Let's say that the division rival, Indianapolis Colts. On top of that, you've got the worst offense in football. You're breaking records offensively, both with the Texans and in the NFL that haven't been done in 19 years. I mean, you are that bad offensively, and your head coach appears to not have a grasp on how to manage the team, the game, the post game pressers, injuries, disciplines. It just seems to be slipping away. So I don't know how it could get any worse. All things considered, maybe in 2 weeks when you play Jacksonville, if you get embarrassed by Jacksonville, even though that would be on the road because then you don't have the home aspect of it, but maybe that would be a rough week.
I mean, Clint, they've had two consecutive weeks they're benching starters, like big starters, because of disciplinary issues. And the number one thing they seem to be trying to push apart is building this culture. And they're benching starters. One, the highest paid player on defense yesterday. Maybe your best player on defense the week before, right? I mean,
right.
So they got off the field stuff and they got on the field stuff because they're getting their asses handed to them in a major way. And now we've reached a point here, and I think we've been there, but it felt a lot stronger yesterday when we were in the building. It feels like now, Clint, that you got a fan base that's not even going to the games even to say, all right, man, I know we're struggling, but all right, I'm still rooting on my Texans. It almost feels like they were booing multiple times, including the half.
Yeah.
It almost feels like more that fans are coming there to express their anger and their issues with what's happening instead of rooting on their Texans.
Yeah.
Like we seem to have gotten to that point. So
For me, it's the biggest thing is like the fans don't have anything to hang on to. I mean, we watched the Detroit Lions win a ball game yesterday, and clearly it was building. You know, I mean, it was one of those where they were sticking together. They were all fighting to win a ball game. They were doing what's best for the organization. They were doing what's best for the players to be put in a position to win a ball game, and they finally kicked the door in and they went crazy. It was a beautiful moment. Like, the Texans are so far from that, and that's one of the other bottom of the barrel teams. The Texans are so far from that moment. I mean, that it's crazy. And so, it's bad. You just hope that this week was rock bottom, man.
Yeah, you hope so. David Culley, the coaches show coming up right behind us. And remember, tomorrow Nick Caserio will join Payne and Pendergast exclusively 7:30 tomorrow. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Tyler, great job. Clint, great job as always. I am Ron, the show. And as always, Houston, we love you, baby.
And the world. Be a Coors Light and jump off in this pool.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.